You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today. This HIV Vaccine Awareness Day, 2023, at AVAC, we're thinking about the state of the field and the implications of several big trials over the last few years. In January, the Mosaico vaccine trial discontinued, finding no signal of protection. Incidence was 4.1, whether you got the vaccine or not. For many who track the science closely, this disappointment may not have been a big surprise, because in the middle of 2021, a sister study called Imbucoto, with a similar but not identical vaccine recipe, also was found to have no significant efficacy. So where we find the field now, there's diversity in vaccine research, but no clear concept that's ready to test in a late-phase trial. Nothing moving towards product development, which is to say that researchers are back to testing new ideas in early-phase research. So there's a lot of head-scratching going on to distill what we now know based on these trials and from the AMP trials that studied broadly neutralizing antibodies with some very complicated results, and to then apply what we've learned so far from all this work and pinpoint what to do next in the quest for an HIV vaccine. Dr. Katie Stevenson is joining us to help explore all of this. Katie is a doctor, a researcher, a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, and part of the Center for Virology and Vaccine Research. Amongst other things, she's conducted research on vaccines, antibodies for treatment, broadly neutralizing antibodies for prevention, for COVID, HIV, Zika, a big body of research behind her. Welcome, Katie, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here. I love AVAC so much. You know, not only do I love all of the work that you guys have done over the years, but, you know, incredible work for the community, but you also make the best infographics, and I cut and paste them all the time in all my presentations. So thank you.
That is very good to hear. So what's your reaction to the Mosaico and Imbucoto results? What do you think they mean for HIV vaccine research?
So these are two trials that were testing a similar vaccine concept that is very similar to the J&J COVID vaccine. And the goal of those two trials were to test whether these vaccines could, one, elicit antibody responses, and two, to see if those antibodies would protect people from getting HIV. The first study in Imbucoto took place in Sub-Saharan Africa in women, about 2021, something like that. And that was the first sign that that vaccine concept was very likely not to be a success. But there was a chance that maybe Mosaico, which was mostly in men and in trans women and in the Americas, that, you know, maybe there would be enough difference that we would get a different result. But when those Mosaico results did return, it too showed that that vaccine concept didn't work. These vaccines do elicit antibodies, but not the ones we need. And this relates to kind of the big picture of HIV research, which is, where do we stand today with HIV vaccines? And what we've learned in the last couple of years is, if we're going to use antibodies to protect against HIV, they need to be broadly neutralizing antibodies. And these are sort of potent, powerful antibodies that can suppress or neutralize, you know, all different variants of HIV. And the Imbucoto and Mosaico vaccines, they didn't elicit that kind of antibody and they didn't work. So I think we've learned a tremendous amount from that. And in parallel, we also got results back from the AMP studies, which were testing broadly neutralizing antibodies, that showed very clearly that when those antibodies match the viruses, then they work. So the take home from these disappointing studies, and that we don't have the product that we can hand out, is that we know some facts. We know that non-broadly neutralizing antibodies, they don't work, but broadly neutralizing antibodies can work. That's actually like a really big milestone in the field to have that kind of knowledge right now.
I guess I want to unpack that a little more. I know when I am looking at the coverage and listening to some of the presentations, I get the message that we need to keep going. We need to leverage what we've learned. Are there any lessons you think are being overlooked when you listen to the conversation going on in the field?
I think there's one major thing that I think we often overlook. So prior to the results of the ant study, we really did not know if the human immune system was capable of protecting against HIV. We knew about rare people with, you know, some genetic mutations that might be resistant to getting HIV, but we really didn't know if there was some kind of antibody response that was possible in the human immune system. And what we found out in the ant study is that, yes, it is possible, because those were human antibodies. Those were antibodies that were isolated from, you know, that was an antibody that was isolated from an actual patient who lived with HIV. And there's nothing, it's like a completely native to humans antibody. It's something that we created ourselves. We made it, and it actually worked to protect. In that study, to remember, why did it fail? It failed because there were lots of viruses that were resistant to that antibody. But when the virus was sensitive to the antibody worked. And that is really a huge milestone. Like, that has never been shown before, that the human immune system is capable of making an immune response that can protect against HIV.
Right. When you say we made it, you don't mean we made it in a lab. You mean the human body made it.
Yeah, the human body made it. In this case, we made it, discovered, characterized it, and then took it and kind of manufactured it, cloned it up, you know, to become a monoclonal antibody to make it at scale. But the original invention of that antibody, right, was like invented by that participant who had HIV, and that antibody was isolated from that.
Right. So what are the next big questions then, just on broadly neutralizing antibodies in vaccine science?
So the question is, how do we get everyone to make these antibodies? And how can we do it with a vaccine as opposed to someone actually having HIV to get these antibodies? And we always say the Holy Grail of HIV vaccine research is how to get a vaccine to stimulate and educate the immune system to make a broadly neutralizing antibody. And there's a lot of science that has gone on in the last, you know, decade or more that has really unpacked how the human immune system works, such that we know today a lot more about how we can push and pull the immune system towards this antibody that we want. And there's a lot of ideas that have been tested in animal models and in the laboratory that look promising. Well, where we are today in vaccine research is now translating those ideas into early phase proof of concept studies to show that we can push and pull and educate the immune system to make these antibodies. So that's where we are with most of the vaccine research. I would like to talk about a different concept, which is based on CMV, which is also in development.
So let's explore that right now. So one big idea is researchers are looking at very early phase trials of how to nurture the development of broadly neutralizing antibodies. And now you're mentioning another strategy, one that does not involve broadly neutralizing antibodies.
Yeah, right. So right now we've been talking about broadly neutralizing antibodies from all directions. But one thing I think the field needs to be aware of is that we're putting all our eggs in one basket, which is the broadly neutralizing antibody basket. And there's good reason for that. All that data that I just told you about is the reason. But we can't ever do that. We need in research to always have other hypotheses that we're testing. And one of the other ones that's not based on eliciting a broadly neutralizing antibody is a vaccine based on a CMV viral vector. And this would be testing a different type of strategy.
Yeah. First, let's start with what is CMV?
So CMV is a virus that people with HIV may be very familiar with. At least in the United States, it affects a lot of people. It is cytomegalovirus.
Cytomegalovirus, CMV.
Yes. So CMV is a virus that in its natural form can cause disease. For people with HIV, they may remember CMV as a cause of retinitis or eye issues. So people with AIDS, for example, can present with vision problems from CMV. It also can be a problem if you're pregnant and you get CMV. So CMV itself is a virus that we've been tracking in infectious diseases for a long time because it can cause problems. So it is a little unusual to say, okay, let's start with that virus and use that as a potential vector for a vaccine. And the reason why this was explored is because CMV is a very, very old virus. It's been around with humans for, you know, before humans existed. And so our immune system interacts with CMV in a really interesting way that can kind of be tuned. So you can manipulate this virus to get it to work with the immune system in new ways. And researchers in monkey models have designed some of these CMV-based vaccines and seen really remarkable results in monkeys to control and clear HIV infection.
Got it. If it's not triggering broadly neutralizing antibodies, let's talk about how it works, since it's different.
It is different. It is different. So the way that it works in really cool research that's been done by Lewis Picker and a whole bunch of other scientists and colleagues is that they would vaccinate a whole bunch of monkeys with this CMV-style vaccine. And then they would challenge the monkeys with a virus that's very similar to HIV. And what they would find is that all the monkeys in their studies would all become infected with this virus. And it would look a lot like acute infection with HIV. They would get high viral load, and then they would come down to like a set point viral load. But what they found in the vaccinated monkeys is that they did also all kind of become infected that way. But about half of them, 50% of them, over the course of a couple of weeks, would clear and eradicate the infection completely. So this is not like they become elite controllers.
Elite controllers would mean the monkeys are still HIV positive, but the immune system is keeping the overall level of virus low. In this case, the monkeys who received this vaccine are not elite controllers.
Yeah, it's that they completely arrest the replication of the virus and clear it. They've done all these experiments with this to see how, is that really true? Did they really clear it completely? And, you know, they've looked at all the tissues, they've transplanted tissue from monkeys to other monkeys, and there's just no evidence of any infection anymore. And you can re-challenge these animals, these same ones, several years later, and they'll do the same thing. They'll get infected for a week or two and then completely clear it.
And just to explain, a challenge in this setting means intentionally exposing the monkeys to HIV. And I want to just point out to folks that animal models are notoriously unreliable when it comes to HIV vaccines.
Yes. But right, you took the words out of my mouth. I thought I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Right. But what part of the immune system is working? Do they know?
Yeah. So I am glad you said that about monkey models. I'm a human researcher because I like to get to the human data as quickly as possible. I don't really trust monkey models, you know, too much, but they do give us some clues. And in this case, one of the fascinating pieces is that these vaccinated animals generate no antibody response. They have no detectable antibodies to the vaccine. They get nothing. So how could this vaccine possibly be working? And how it's working is they're eliciting cellular immune responses, so our T cells.
Those are those helper and fighter T cells that so many of us have learned about in HIV.
Yes. And this is not the first time we've looked at using these fighter cells as a way to have a vaccine that works. But these are different. They have a different characteristic. And it seems to be a type of T cell or a type of way that the immune system reacted to this vector that is unique to CMV, which is why we wouldn't use something else. It's CMV and its long history growing up with humans as a species that makes it unique in eliciting this very strange and powerful and awesome T cell response.
Do we know yet what these T cells are doing differently when it's fighting CMV?
We know that it's recognizing infected cells and killing them and clearing them. And we know that where they're doing it is probably the most important piece. So these types of T cells that this vaccine elicits, they tend to reside in tissues like in the mucosa or at lymph nodes that are close to where an infection could happen. In essence, thinking of them as guards at the door like we've made these kind of guards before, but we've always put the guards in maybe the wrong place, like way with inside the castle as opposed to outside the castle. So in this idea, these T cells, we think, are pre-positioned in the right place at the right time to control.
Near the site of infection. So this is also early phase research, right?
It is. It is phase one research with protocols hoping to launch in just a month or two. So this is real active stuff, and it's phase one research, and it is happening now. Going from monkeys to humans is an enormous leap, and what we'll learn from these phase one trials, we really don't know. But what's kind of exciting about this platform is that it could be pretty close to a product if it worked. The other vaccines, which are 90% of what we're working on and also something that I'm involved in and excited about, none of those are quite like a final product ready. So even if they did work to do what we wanted them to do in those phase one studies, we still have to combine them and change them and make all kinds of versions.
That's the broadly neutralizing antibodies you're talking about. There's a lot of work to do, whereas this T-cell strategy, it's easier to move along in the research process towards a product.
Yeah, right. The okay. one that we're testing is similar to the what would be the final product. There are still other strategies besides the broadly neutralizing antibody strategies in this early phase development. And I think that's really important. I actually wish there were a lot more than that, so that we don't get stuck pursuing one hypothesis that, you know, turns out to not be the right one.
Understood. I want to turn to another area of focus about where vaccines fit in HIV prevention, particularly keeping in mind that the field is having a lot of success with ARV-based products, with injectable cabotegravir for PrEP, with a daily oral pill for PrEP. How should vaccine investment fit in? What kind of priority should it be?
I have a lot of thoughts. One way to reframe the question is like, why do we bother researching vaccines anymore at all? And I think we always have to start with the basics to understand, like if you're from outside the field, you're like, why is the NIH investing in this? Or why is everyone still working on this? And the reason is because arguably, you know, vaccines are always going to be the cheapest intervention, most accessible and most durable of all of these interventions. If you think about a vaccine, like the perfect vaccines, you get them once or twice, a simple injection, very few side effects, and an immune response that could last forever. Like measles vaccines can be like that. So when you're talking about equity issues, that's enormous. Cost of goods, your ability to provide kind of mass immunization if possible. That's the critical piece about vaccines, I think, is that people believe that it's the most equitable solution. There's also something to be said for diversity of options. People are really different, and there's no explanation sometimes about why they like one thing other than another, and it's just good to have choices.
Absolutely. I want to ask you about a comment I heard from you talking about the starkness of the field right now on the heels of these vaccine trials that did not show efficacy. You were talking about how difficult the scientific challenge is. I've heard the leader of the HIV Vaccine Trials Network, Larry Corey, say that a vaccine for HIV is the single greatest challenge of biomedical research in the modern age. Is that how you see it? And then what does that mean for researchers like yourself?
I do agree with Dr. Corey about that, and I think it's probably the biggest scientific challenge ever in any domain, more so than landing humans on the moon. But when I speak of starkness, lately I've actually been finding it somewhat motivational, but I'm really trying to pretend like this is the first time we've ever seen this virus. Kind of how it feels a little bit, kind of, you know, like COVID showed up on the scene. We'd never seen it before. And we all went into action. And I kind of feel like it's sort of mentally helpful for me to think, okay, let's just approach HIV like it just came on the scene. Thinking of totally new approaches. We don't know yet what kind of vaccine, you know, is going to be the winner. And going to it, like kind of dropping the baggage of having worked on stuff that didn't work before. Think about it like it's a new challenge, except that there is an advantage. We have an advantage over when we went into COVID research, which is that we know some strategies do not work. And we have a sense of some strategies that may work. And that motivates me.
Right. It's like it's time to take everything we've learned and think out of the box.
Yes. And I think that the field really needs to expand the diversity of scientists who are thinking of new ideas. We have not gotten too far here with the ideas that are coming out of just exclusively United States, Europe. Like, we need to bring in young scientists, really diverse backgrounds all over the world to really think of ideas we can't even imagine. And that's really what we need right now.
Katie Stevenson's call for more researchers from more countries to bring their expertise to the challenge is a message AVAC wants to spread loud and clear. The research enterprise she shared in this podcast is taking on important questions, perhaps groundbreaking questions, in pursuit of an HIV vaccine. But the field is at a turning point, going back to fundamentals to find a strategy that might work so that all the advantages of a vaccine can be marshaled against HIV. This demands the skills and talent of a worldwide network of researchers. And it takes the dogged determination of advocates to keep the research agenda centered on what people really need and want.
You've been listening to PX Pulse, recorded in the New York City studios of the Relic Room. Our theme music was composed by Alexi Stevens. Our engineer is Sam Baer. I'm Jean Barron.